Happy holidays, everybody. He's Sam McEwen. I'm Ben Duty. It's Behind the Ballot from the World Herald and Omaha.com. Sam, we head into Christmas with two basketball teams here in Nebraska and the AP Top 20. That is Nebraska women at number 20, the highest in the Amy Williams era. And that is the Nebraska men off a kind of lackluster performance against North Dakota, still moving up two spots to number 13 in the AP poll. Hot off the presses with that. Let's start with the women's team. Sam, you had the women up in your ballot a couple spots. I think you have a number 18, if I'm not mistaken. Give us the state of affairs of the Nebraska women as we head into Christmas.
Well, Nebraska women's basketball apparently had a sluggish game on Sunday, but won by 31. The reality is, and a lot of times this happens in college basketball, teams will play so-so halves, and Nebraska did. They trailed early in the third quarter against Cal Baptist. That doesn't mean much. I know that people kind of get caught up on that, and I know that Amy Williams was asked a lot of questions after the game. But the reality is that Nebraska's a really, really good fourth quarter team, and they have been really for the last 5 or 6 years under Amy Williams. It's kind of the way she builds her team. It's kind of the way she builds her depth. And so if Nebraska goes into a fourth quarter tied or a little bit behind, chances are good they're going to win. And they did that against Penn State on the road a couple of weeks ago, and of course they did it against Cal Baptist. They dominated that second half. That's not surprising to me. I think that Nebraska will have problems winning games this season for sure, and they may even have a heck of a challenge beating USC or Iowa next week. But they've done a good job so far with the resume that they have. They're really good defensively. They are able to put multiple waves of players at opposing teams, and over the course of four quarters, that has a cumulative effect that wears down the opponent while Nebraska stays fresh.
This was my first look at this team really in person. I took my kids to the game. My daughter, who is a kind of a behind-the-ballot connoisseur, asked me, Sam, when they're close to being tied in the third quarter, do you think Nebraska's going to drop in the poll? And I told – and I like that mindset. I like that mindset. Is Sam going to drop them in the poll? And you did not, and a couple teams lost, and so they actually move up. Man, that's an interesting team. Let me give you a couple super quick observations. Number one, they have size. They really have size. But cross with that, give me some tape breakdown. The Nebraska post players like to shoot threes. They like to shoot threes, and they bricked a handful of them in that second quarter yesterday, which is part of what got them behind. So what do you make of that offense, particularly the threes? I think they started 4 of 19 from three, and then they start making some shots, which is part of how they come back and end up winning by 30-plus. But interesting offense. Definitely a big team that a lot of people shoot threes. Is that a fair read of it?
Yes, they've been recruiting posts who shoot three-pointers since the departure of Kate Kane, who was the first center for Nebraska under Amy Williams. And Kate was not a three-point shooter. She was a back-to-the-basket classic style center. But since then, they've recruited pretty much exclusively posts who can shoot threes. I think in a perfect universe, Amy Williams is a lot like a team that everybody can step out and shoot the three. And there are teams within college basketball that are really good at doing that. And I think she would love to have that kind of team that would sort of five out on the floor. Steve Kerr, a little bit of what Fred Hoiberg does. Every one of Fred's posts, with maybe the exception of Leo Curtis, although Leo Curtis can shoot the three too, can shoot. And so I think that's kind of what she wants. It's not uncommon for Jess Petrie to step out there. She isn't the best three-point shooter they've got. Neither is Petra Bojan. Amaya Hargrove is a very good shooter and a little bit of a flat shot, but when you're 6'2 and you're able to drive, you're not necessarily going to get the 6'4, 6'5 post player on you. So yeah, it's pretty common. At this point, they have pretty good three-point shooters. I would rather not see Eliza Maupin take too many of those, but she did not play on Sunday, and she would be the player who would be least likely to shoot the three ball.
Things are going to get real, Sam, for this team, and the same is true on the men's side. Things will get very, very real with this schedule. What should the Husker fan expect the next couple weeks from the women's basketball team?
Well, the defense is really, really important. So they're going to play USC, and they're going to play Iowa in the very first week when they reopen Big Ten play. And I might favor them to beat USC. I think it's going to be a very tight game. USC is very athletic. Nebraska doesn't necessarily always struggle with athletic teams, but USC is very athletic. And then they're going to play Iowa, and they did win at Iowa last year. Iowa's a tough, tough draw for Nebraska. If I was hitting their threes, and when they came to Lincoln last year, they're a tough team for Nebraska to beat. So Nebraska plays very hard in that game. Iowa plays very hard in that game. Those two teams are absolutely at this point rivals. I think Nebraska's defense is what's important. Their offense, even though they score in bunches, and I know they put up a ton of points this season, that's going to come and go a little bit once they get into Big Ten play. Some of these teams are going to face are even taller and even more athletic than Nebraska. And so they're going to have moments where it looks like they're go through long droughts. They're going to have to play really good defense, and their defense will have to create offense. They're going to have to get backcourt steals, easy layups, and Britt Prince is going to have to get even more aggressive. It's got to be her team. They don't have a lot of players who can get to the cup. She can do it. Callen Haight can kind of do it. Haley Weaver can probably do it. Maybe Amaya Hargrove if she's got the right matchup. But a lot of these players are going to be spot-up shooters, things like that. So Britt Prince really has to take control and has to be very, very aggressive in the way that she attacks opposing defenses in the Big Ten. And I think she will be, but she's been a little reticent the last couple of weeks as they've played lesser opponents.
Nebraska has its highest ranking since 2015. Here's a question for you. Is this the best Nebraska team since then, or is this ranking more a product of a couple teams lost in front of them? They haven't played a great schedule. They've been able to stay undefeated for a long time, etc. Where does the team rank compared to teams the past decade?
Yeah, I think this is probably the best team that Amy Williams is at. I think she would probably admit that. If they get Natalie Potts back, she's still recovering from an ACL. They'll be even better. They'll have to work Natalie back into kind of the team. But Natalie's a good player, and she would probably be the best player on this team if she were healthy. Her or Britt would. And so, like, yeah, they're good. This is the best team that Amy's had, and it's because she has depth. She's actually went out and filled out the roster with power conference players, and some of the players that she hoped would develop over the course of 4 years have. Jessica Petry and Callen Haight and Logan Nisley have all become really, really good players in Nebraska.
What's the ceiling for this team, Sam?
23, 24 wins. Right now they're 12-0. They play, let's see, 29 regular season games. I'd be surprised if they were better than 23-6. Right now I have them around 21, 22 wins in the regular season. That's before they go to the Big Ten tournament. And I'm usually pretty right on that. Like the Big Ten is unbelievably good, and some of the teams they're going to face are just going to be really hard matchups. Then there's going to be some games where they are hard matchups for ranked teams. I like the way they match up with, for example, Maryland, who's number 7 in the country. They've always matched up well with them. I kind of like how they match up against USC. But then there's going to be teams they don't match up well against. UCLA is one of those. Michigan is one of those. And frankly, Ohio State is too. They haven't beat Ohio State in a while.
If you're a basketball fan, you should get out to the arena. That's a PSA for that. Again, kids and I were there. We ponied up, Sam, for the $18 lower bowl tickets, which was
Nice.
kind of fun. We were behind the CBU bench with a lot of CBU people near us. They had a group there, a
They
little
were all
group
there for
of
Chloe Lemon. Yeah, who was a sophomore. Yeah.
big, local contingent. And that is interesting. I think, we went, Sam, my kids and I, went to the Fairfield, Iowa game, and there were about five of us Fairfield fans. In Iowa City. This Cal Baptist, there might have been 30, 35. They
Yeah,
showed well.
they did.
But that be as it may, there are good seats available at these women's games. It's a fun team. And, as you know, Sam, we got here having to make some decisions about our basketball viewing between Nebraska and Creighton, as many Nebraska people do. And the answer is that you've got to go to the Husker games on the women's side and the men's side until proven otherwise. That'd be my advice. If you're the, you should go to both if you can, but you've got decisions to make, and
Yeah.
my household's decisions are going to be to watch some Husker women's basketball. Okay, on to the men, where look, the Nebraska men look still better than the Creighton men, although Creighton, I thought pretty good the other day with a nice
Oh,
little
they found
blowout
them.
win
Creighton's
against
found. They found
Marquette,
them.
and
They're gonna be good.
that'll be a little topic here for us. But the Nebraska men trail North Dakota at the half. And yet they figure it out in the second half, and now they are the 13th ranked team in the country as they head toward New Hampshire and then Michigan State. I think they will beat New Hampshire. I do not know if they'll beat Michigan State. So, Sam, where do the Husker men stand in your opinion as we head toward Christmas?
I think that's about the right ranking for them. Obviously, at the very top of the AP rankings, and we have writers who watch probably more college basketball, men's college basketball than I do, but there's teams at the very top that are really, really good. And I think Nebraska is probably not in that tier. So Michigan, Gonzaga, Arizona, those teams are at the very top of the sport, and they're all really good. I don't know if Nebraska's quite in that tier, but I put Nebraska probably in the second tier or maybe that third tier, which is about where they're at now. For example, they don't have as much talent as Duke. Sure, but they play really well together, and they're really connected defensively. Even though they trailed at half against North Dakota, if you're only giving up 26 points, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And usually the shots are going to kick in, and that's exactly what happened. So they're a team with chemistry and toughness, and they got enough depth. You know, they don't Connor Seigens out, that doesn't help them, but they got enough depth that if some guy's not playing really well, then Braden Frager can come in and pick up where Price Sanford left off. That having that ability to have multiple guys win a game for you is really valuable. And last year, they just had Bryce Williams, and they really didn't have much after that.
I got a two-part take here for you, Sam, and I want your take on both. Number one, I think the team is a smidge overrated at number 13. Not a lot, but I'm not convinced they're the 13th best team in the country. If they beat Michigan State, especially if they beat them handily, I will revise that. I think they're close. I don't think they're underrated at 13, put it that way. So I'm a little cautious about the ranking. That said, that's part one. Here's part two. As you know, I talked with Kent Pavelka. For my media notes column last week, we talked about all sorts of stuff, including where this team fits. Kent told me he's talking about how good the team is, and he said he kind of qualified it by saying it's not a national championship team. And I said to him, "Hey, on a second. They're the 15th ranked team in the country. Why can't they be a national championship team?" So again, I don't think that they are on a short list of the best teams in the country. They're not a top five or six team in the country, but as you know, Sam, you don't have to be one of the five or six best teams in the country to make a deep run in
Nope,
March.
that's
If you look
right.
at teams that have won national championships, there are plenty of teams that have been outside the top 15 in December and they make a deep run. So my question to Kent, which I will posit to you, is why can't the Husker fan expect a deep March, not even expect it? Because, I think the Husker fan wants to win one game and maybe that's enough. But in terms of just imagining things, I don't think you should be drug tested if you think this team could make a significant run into March. What say you?
Yeah, I think second weekend is a legitimate goal. I mean, I don't see a team that once they get over the hump of winning one game, I don't think it would be a big barrier for them to win two. And you're absolutely right that the Final Four has teams in it almost every other year that you would not expect to be there, right? San Diego State played for the national championship. Florida Atlantic was in the Final Four that same year. Loyola Chicago. There are teams that are four seeds like UConn a couple of years ago that won the national championship that don't really look like four seeds. And you kind of know, going into the NCAA tournament that if that team just shows up and takes care of business with two NBA draft picks, or I think they had three, to be honest with you, they're going to be really hard to beat. I don't know that I would put Nebraska in that category, and I wouldn't put it in Michigan's category. I think Michigan and Arizona. Iowa State is third, and what's so interesting about Iowa State is I actually think on the right day, Nebraska and Iowa State could go nose to nose for 40 minutes, and it could be a thrilling game. But I wouldn't necessarily put Michigan and Nebraska in that category right yet. But I think Nebraska's got a second weekend run in them for sure. I think, Nebraska fans and Nebraska media they're not going to count anything before they get that first win. So if Nebraska's a four seed and they're playing a 13 seed, it's probably dangerous. People are going to be biting their nails until, 58, 56, or whatever it is. It's just going to be such a barrier to get through. And once Nebraska does it, I think they could go a long, long way. So we'll see what happens.
I think it's actually okay if you consider a round of 32 a successful season. I just,
Oh, it would be.
I'm okay with that reluctantly, but I just don't think that you've got to declare that the top of the mountaintop with any certainty. Let's do a Creighton minute and then we'll get out of here. Creighton plays tonight. By the time you listen to this, it might be after that against Utah Tech, which is an interesting Christmas week game. The Jays are favored by 19 and a half. And what that comes off of is a pretty good start to Big East play, including 84-63 Saturday night over Marquette. And that's a Marquette team that is diminished based on where they've been. But it's not an absolutely awful team, and you beat them by 21. So this Jays team, I find to be worthy of some attention as you head toward the new year. What do you think, Sam?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Creighton historically gets better and better each year. And so they tend to, well, we'll be fair. I'd say Creighton tends to peak like the week before the Big East tournament. They've never won the Big East tournament. And when they get there, they usually fall maybe a game or two short. But Creighton's really good through Big East play, and then they find a way in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament to play really, really well. The question mark for Creighton has long been November. They have struggled to win games early in seasons against marquee non-conference opponents, and it's affected their seeding when they get to the NCAA tournament. That's going to happen again. Right now, I wouldn't say they're in it, but they're trending in a good direction. John Walker did a nice job last week of writing about probably what he thought they would need in the Big East to maybe, say, yes, we're going to be in the NCAA tournament. He said 15-5 as a league record. I'm here to tell you, I don't think that's out of question. I think they can do that. The Big East is not up, it's down. And Creighton, if it can do all the things that it had originally planned on doing as the season began, and they can account for the absence of Jackson McAndrew, I think they can do it. Getting Hudson Greer back will help, but it does feel like they have an identity and they're moving in the right direction.
I'm here to tell you that 15-5 in the Big East doesn't really give you a great shot to be in the NCAA tournament based on how soft this league is. That's where I want to ask you. I've been following Big East basketball for a very, very long time. This is, I think, at least a two-bid league, but I'm looking at St. John's losing to Kentucky. UConn is in the tournament, barring a catastrophe. My question for you, as I sort of think out loud about the softness of this Big East season, Sam, is given the way that things went for Creighton in November and the lack of a non-conference resume, is it possible you want to beat UConn in Connecticut? I'll give you that. But are there enough quality Big East wins to be had that the Jays have an NCAA tournament resume given how soft the Big East is? I mean, how do you look at that?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's probably enough wins in there. It would obviously help to beat Connecticut and St. John's, whether that's at home or on the road. But Villanova is good enough. And if you can go win at Villanova, you can take one from Villanova. Again, if you go 15-5 in the league, the one you're looking at basically is that you're, 20-10. And that's going to put you in position to be on the bubble. And Creighton benefits from having played a very, very difficult non-conference schedule. Now, the loss to Kansas State hurts, and I think John believes the loss to Baylor hurts too, and I trust him on that. That all that said, Creighton challenged itself and tested itself, and will be able to present to the committee an argument of halfway through the non-conference schedule, we lost our best player. It took us 2 weeks to adjust to that, and once we did, we were really good. And I think that'll be a compelling argument because I think people will look at, well, you know what? It wasn't really fair. They lost this guy and he was their best player and they had to adjust to that. And once they did, they became a better team. I think that 20-10 with a win in the Big East tournament puts Creighton in a pretty good position. Now, I could be wrong about that. I think a lot of Creighton fans who are very humble, Creighton fans never think too much of themselves. They may tell me I'm wrong, but I just my sense of seeing these things over the years, I think they'll have a compelling argument to make, especially as some of the teams that they lost to, Gonzaga may not lose again in the regular season. Iowa State might be a 30-win team. It's just going to be a very hard case to say that Creighton didn't belong because they played too good of teams that just beat them. And that's basically what they're looking at. I mean, Gonzaga, Iowa State, Nebraska are elite teams. The Kansas State and Baylor losses hurt. They do. I don't know if Baylor loss does. Kansas State one does, but they're not that bad. They're all pretty good losses, frankly.
Make sure you don't lose to Utah Tech, and then you play Butler here in Omaha on December 30th, 8 o'clock tip on FS1. I'll be locked into that on TV. I'll be going to get down to the arena here. You're giving me a reason to at least pay a very close attention to this team as you head to the new year. And Sam, in the content business, we've got a lot of basketball teams who are worthy of some attention
Yeah.
and some video plays and some page views and some subscriptions here. as you head to the new year. Give us a parting thought as we head toward Christmas on college basketball.
It's a really good year in college basketball, and it helps that Nebraska is really good. It's cool to be part of a good story. And some years are kind of, eh, this is not that year. There's a lot of really good teams. There's a lot of undefeated teams. I think Nebraska could, you know, make that kind of magical run, and they're doing it in a year when the Big Ten is also really good. And so there's been years where Nebraska's been in the Big Ten, and the league has just not been very good, right? This isn't one of those years. The league is legit. Nebraska's legit. So we're going to learn a lot about Nebraska once they take on these teams in the Big Ten, starting with Michigan State, but certainly not ending there. If you look at the NET rankings right now, you've got Michigan's number one, Purdue's number seven, Iowa's number 11. Iowa, they're kind of wonky, but they're not bad. Obviously, they've already beaten Illinois, and you got a lot of legitimate teams in the middle of the pack, like Ohio State and Washington and Wisconsin, which also Nebraska's already beat. It's going to be an interesting year. And we'll see what happens.
By the way, again, if you have a basketball fan in your household, they don't already subscribe to our product here, buy them a subscription, omaha.com/subscribe, and please get your basketball loving friend, relative, etc. Just a nice little holiday present. You can read Sam and John and Wilson and Tom Chattel, the rest of the guys, all winter long. Okay, he's Sam, I'm Ben. We'll see you soon. I'm behind the ballot.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.